It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
All right, let me turn you up so I can actually hear you.
Consequence Podcast Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Jorge Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with... It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here, checking out the episode. Please do hit that subscribe button, of course, so you can keep up with the entire series. You'll get three brand new interviews sent to you every single week. New one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover those new ones. You can do so at any of the usual podcast places like Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can grab us at NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith with. But if you head over to Apple Podcast and subscribe there, hit the follow button, and then leave us a review, you could have a chance to win some great merchandise from Consequence and get a shout out right here on this series as well. Again, head over to Apple Podcast, hit the follow button, write us a review, take a screenshot of that review, and then head to the show notes here in this series. There'll be a link there that you can drop all of that at and submit for some prizes. That's over at Apple Podcasts. And there's plenty of reasons to do it too, considering all the great guests that we have on here all the time. Recently, including actresses Kate Siegel, we talked about the fall of the House of Usher with Kate, Shelley Hennig from Obliterated on Netflix. We had director Mick G on to talk about the Netflix movie Family Switch, as well as the band X Ambassadors, Chicago, R.E.M., the cast of Goosebumps, the director from Hunger Games, Neil deGrasse Tyson, Dolly Parton, Rufus Wainwright, Bush, Everclear, Johnny Marr of the Smiths, Paul Rogers of Bad Company, just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And that's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, so excited to welcome Roseanne Cash. We are talking about the just-released 30th anniversary edition of her album, The Wheel. Released in 1993, it would kick off what pretty much becomes the second chapter of her career. She's going to talk about getting her master's back from Sony. That's how it led to this anniversary edition. What it was like to make this record as her life was in a complete upheaval, and the beauty of an album that has an artist's back up against the wall. Roseanne's also going to discuss the scene of musicians she found in early 90s New York, having director Mary Lambert helm the video for The Wheel, and the Austin City Limits and Columbia Records Radio Hour live sets that fill out the anniversary edition, which the latter of those featuring backup vocals from David Byrne on one song. As for the present day, Roseanne's going to reveal how she'll be reimagining some of the songs for the upcoming Reinventing the Wheel tour. She'll give us the story on singing with The National on their song Crumble, and plans to have Matt Berninger sing on a track of her own for an upcoming release, and that she's covered Lou Reed's Magician for an upcoming tribute album. All of that and more, we're talking 30th anniversary edition of The Wheel. It's Kyle Meredith with Roseanne Cash.
Hi, Kyle. It's nice to speak with you.
It's nice to see you. I've been fan follower for so long, and you put out some incredible music over the years, but I'm really extra excited because we sort of get to jump back in time today and talk about one of your biggest albums, the 30th anniversary of The Wheel, which just got re-released. So first off, 30 years of this one, it always seems weird, congratulations, but I feel like you have to say congratulations, you know, it's like it exists.
Well, not only congratulations for this re-release, but that after 30 years, I got my master recordings back from Sony, which is why we're re-releasing it. And I didn't expect how it would feel to actually get my master recording back and to own them after 30 years. It was really moving to me, you know, and that's kind of what led to thinking about re-releasing it, remastering it. It's exactly the original recording, but we remastered it and started my own record label with John Leventhal, Rumble Strip Records. And so this is our first release on Rumble Strip.
Heck of a first release, by the way. It's
Yeah, 30 years. It's hard to believe. I mean, that's the first album that we made together, the first recordings we made together, the first songs we wrote together. And it was a transformative time in our lives. And, you know, I don't usually like looking back and listening to my old work. And so I had a little trepidation about listening to it again. I hadn't listened to it in years and years. And then I was touched, you know, it's like, that's a really accurate reflection of that time in our lives. We fell in love making this record. You know, we've now been together 30 years and I'm proud of it.
Let's take that moment then. Let's, you know, let's head back to that era, you know, in 1993 and around there, especially because I know there's a big story, you know, musically, lyrically, this seemed like a big jump from where you had been previously with Interiors. I think the story's been told, but, you know, for interview's sake, what happened during that time? What led to that?
Well, it was actually, I mean, I think of it in three steps. Like, I had King's Record Shop in the late 80s, that album, which the cover was from Louisville, from old King's Record Shop in Louisville. And that was really a successful album. You know, it was the first time a woman had gotten four number one singles off of one album. So I had a lot of leverage with the record label. And I said, I want you to give me a lot of money and I want you to let me produce my next album myself. And they said, okay and okay. So my marriage to Rodney Crowell was starting to fall apart and I was writing these very dark songs and that became Interiors. So that was a really dark interior acoustic based record that I produced myself and the label didn't want it. They said, we can't do anything with this. And I said, well, it's going to get worse. So they transferred me from Nashville to the New York division of the label. And then eventually I transferred myself to New York 32 years ago. And I started writing I had met John Leventhal. I started writing these songs that were just full of fire and longing and transformation and destruction, you know, very powerful time in my life. And I asked him to produce the record and he said, I'll co-produce it with you. So, and then we wrote a few of the songs together, but God, it was a turning point in my life. It's, you know, everything was both despair and the excitement of a whole new life. And I hear that in those songs.
Yeah, that's I think I was reading in maybe the bio of this record, the one sheet or whatever, you know, like you thought there was a moment where your career might be done. And there's something about a Back Against the Wall album.
Yeah. Like, right.
You know, a lot of times those end up being like, you know, the sophomore album or whatever. Like I've always said, like I have a weird love for sophomore albums, you know, especially the ones that don't work. Those are some of my favorites. This one isn't a sophomore record, but it is sort of in that, you know, same vein. Like this could all leave just as quick as it became. To hear, you know, like I know we hear this different than you hear this. Like you hear this, and especially knowing that some of this record is New Love, and I don't know how much this record is also still telling the tale of the divorce right behind it. But what an interesting juxtaposition. Like how much of that really is right on the surface for you?
I have to say, you really caught my attention when you said that you love sophomore records, particularly if they aren't good. We should have a really long conversation, Kyle, about a lot of things.
I mean, please let it take you where you want it to take you right now.
Yeah, no, we just dropped to a whole new level. I'm really digging this. And I even forgot the particulars of the question, but let's just say the album isn't a diary, and yet it's from the deepest parts of myself and what I was going through then. And, you know, maybe I overused my nature metaphors. Maybe there's, you know, a bit of New Age language in it, 1993, but it was real. And John and I, the first song we wrote together, Seventh Avenue, I was living overlooking Seventh Avenue in Greenwich Village and just, you know, at the bottom, just like, what have I done? I've broken up a 12-year marriage. My kids are, you know, my kids, God, all of it. If, you know, anyone who's been through divorce, you know, and yet there's this new life on my horizon. How am I going to integrate all of this? Well, you know, those kind of moments lead to some really good art and music, as we know. And it wasn't that successful, and yet it found its audience, which is really all you can hope for, because people say to me still, man, that record got me through my divorce, or this. I had two journalists tell me that they were both separately embedded in war zones during when that record came out, separately listening to it, and that they got married.
Oh, wow.
I know. Isn't that crazy? Like that's...
And we'll be right back right after this.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Roseanne Cash. And it should be said, like, you, this record found its audience without the radio.
Yeah.
Even being part of the equation as it, you know, might have hoped to have been. Like, and I think that even coming from a person who spent most of his career in radio, like, that's one of the best things. That says so much about what the record, because there's a lot of records that get embedded because they get played so much, whether or not they're great, you know, maybe they're fine. But I think it just says something about this album that it didn't need that. And still yet, here we are celebrating it.
Yeah. And it was a risk too. And it was a turnstile into a whole other life for me, you know, and I felt it was a risk at the time. I was scared, but it was the right thing to do to climb out on that limb.
Okay. I mean, there's that line in there in Seventh Avenue. It said, I am not a lighthouse. Like, there's a lot of great lyrics throughout this record, but that one punches, you know, because that says so much.
Thank you.
You know, right away. All right. So I'm going to take your sidebar. When I talk about the sophomore records and the ones, like, what came to mind for you?
Well, what came to mind for me was about you. I was thinking, wow, this guy's a deep listener. And also, I have a friend who he taught the history of popular music at a school here in New York. And he and I have had this argument for years that he says there is no evolution in an artist's life. There is no evolution in the work. He said it's only about stages, different stages and phases of the artist's work. Well, I disagree. I think there probably is some kind of evolution. You know, I don't overuse nature metaphors anymore, but whatever. But that came to mind when you said the sophomore records that aren't very good. It's like, well, you're paying attention to the stages that are lesser known or lesser accepted. And that's interesting to me. I mean, my sophomore record really would be Seven Year Ache. So that was a big record for me. But honestly, the sophomore record would have been my first American record, right or wrong, because I made an album in Germany before then. So I don't know. We could talk about this for days. Like, whose sophomore record do you really love?
Oh, it'd be hard to get, because there's so many artists, and it's not one specific. Like, I could probably put that list together, but I would have to, you know, take that moment to think about it. But I've always noticed that, like, even there's something about when an artist is more or less having to scrape the barrel, right? Like, the great songs are great, and most of the time they're undeniable. But even like I collect soundtracks. I love, you know, that's musically. And what I love about those are a lot of times the cast off, like the label said, what do you got? Oh, this one didn't make a record. We'll put that out there. You know, it's like, well, that's the one I want to know about. That's the song, you know, why does it even exist? That type of thing. You know, I'm attracted to those type of songs.
Which soundtracks do you really love? I have some soundtracks that I really.
I've been going lately. I went back. There's a couple in the 80s, 9 1/2 weeks, and She's Having a Baby. I've been listening to both of those for different reasons. Of course, the 90s were the apex of soundtrack culture. You know, they were all throughout there. So there's lots of those, from the big ones like Dazed to Confused and Godzilla to, you know, a lot of the smaller. There's a movie I found called Amateur. I think that actually came out a little bit later, but it was part of the indie boom. And, you know, and it was just like this. I was looking at that one. That's where I had never heard Greg Brown before. And I found, so there's discovery on those as well. And, you know, that's what I love.
American Beauty. That's a great soundtrack. Thomas Mann.
Yeah.
The Mission. Do you know the soundtrack to The Mission? Mm-mm. Oh, that was beautiful. And Mark Knopfler's soundtrack to Cal. You should check that out.
I've heard some of it because he loves to score, you know, and and I could listen to him score anything, obviously.
Oh, honestly. Me too.
Well, speaking of artists like that and kind of pulling us back, you know, to the wheel, you found a scene in early 90s New York. I mean, even looking at the guests on this, you know, with Benmont, Bruce Coburn, Mary Chapin, Mark Cohn, Patty Larkin. You know, I don't know if you can, as you look back on, if you're able to kind of put it in the box, like what was the scene you found in the early 90s in New York?
I found a kind of anonymity that I really craved. I mean, living in Nashville was like living in a fishbowl. And I'm interior as a writer, and I like the anonymity of being in New York. And even if somebody recognizes you, they're so cool about it. You know, hey, saw you on Letterman, and then they keep walking, you know, don't really say anything. So I found people working at the top of their game who really weren't interested in celebrity. And that was a relief and just incredibly inspiring to me. And the music community and the writers community and the visual artist community here is one that I've just gotten. I'm humbled and inspired to have friends in all of those arenas, and it just makes me feel competitive in the best sense possible. Like, I want to be at the top of my game as well.
Do you find that New York directed your sound opposite of the way Nashville might have?
Well, that's interesting. I don't know, because, you know, John, I mean, I love early country and folk music and Appalachian and the blues as much as anyone on earth. And so does John. He was the only New Yorker I've ever met who knows his Merle Haggard and his, you know, Appalachian narrative ballads and his everything. And that was inspiring. So we met on that level. And at the same time, you know, he's very sophisticated. He's he listens to Copeland and Bernard Herrmann and, you know, Stephen Barber and everybody else, as well as Merle Haggard and the Carter family. So I think that he's pulled me into being a better version of myself. And I think maybe I've had that effect on him as well.
I've never thought about it in that context, but I would be interested now to go back and listen to all your records and see if I feel like that, you know, like if I hear that, those New Yorkness, whatever that might mean, you know, in those instances.
You know what I think that just occurred to me when you when we're talking about this is that when I was in the South, a lot of times I feel like pulling away from the South, about going against the grain. And when I got to New York, it took a while, but I felt I could embrace all the Southernness that was a part of me, both ancestrally and musically. I guess that's a common experience, right? You have to get away from something to really own it and love it.
Yeah, you never want to celebrate it when you're here. Speaking as someone living nearly in the South, however you put us geographically, but it does seem to be celebrated when I leave, you know.
Yeah, like, sure.
I get that and everything. You did one music video for this album, and you had Mary Lambert direct it. I was curious about that because it's interesting. Mary was coming off of Pet Sematary 2 specifically, and the Red Shoe Diaries. A little softcore there. And this video wasn't any of that. I didn't know if that was how did that. Were you friends? Like, I just love to hear that.
No, we met. I forget how it happened, but I'm sure the record label brought me some directors and showed their work. And, you know, when we chose Mary and we shot it in LA, and I mean, I had some stupid idea that we would create scenes based on tarot cards, like with the cross swords and laying on the catafalque and, you know, this guy who spins in the air and all of this stuff. And she was game for it, you know, so we created this whole thing. And I remember one shot, we were on the edge of a cliff in Malibu and there was no guardrail. It was like an actual cliff. And she wanted me to sit on this bench and get the shot. And it was a little scary. And afterwards I said to someone in the crew, I said, I think she was nervous about me falling off. He goes, she doesn't care if you fall off. She wanted the shot.
It's about the art. That's what. Luckily, that didn't happen.
Luckily, it didn't happen. No, it was fun. I liked that video. I mean, you know, John kind of rolled his eyes at it. It's very much of the time and place, and you know, the tarot card thing. But I think it's fun.
Well, especially, you know, coming in the age of music videos, you know, and that when you sort of had to have one, and everyone was getting creative, and you know, and then so much of because of when I grew up, I mean, so much of how I think about music in it is always married with the visual. You know, it's like you don't hear the song without seeing the video.
You know, some people complained about that at the time, like, I don't want a video to take away my options for what I visualize with this music. Yeah, and I understood that. And you know, there's no budgets for that anymore for people in my demographics. Like, we're not going to give you $200,000 to make a video. Figure out a lyric video, you know, write it on a piece of paper and take it with an iPhone.
That's all. And I mean there are videos out there, and I see them, of course. They're not curated toward us in this monoculture anymore, but I still love seeing, you know, when people do get the opportunity, it's still, I appreciate it, I guess.
I get it.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Roseanne Cash. So also with this anniversary edition, we have some live music that I wanted. So you put out the ACL performance that you did, and also the Columbia Records Radio Hour, which also had David Byrne stopping by. And you know, I'm just going to throw out the big generic version of this question, but what was it about these shows? I mean, is there any kind of fun story that comes along with them?
Well, what you're talking about is that in the double album set and the double CD set, there's an extra disc that has live performances from that year. I mean, the factor that holds them all together is they're from that year that the album came out. So they're all from 93. So Austin City Limits show, it was really fun. First time we performed the Wheel songs live. And then the Columbia Radio Hour, which I think is no longer. I don't think it exists anymore.
I don't think it does either. Yeah.
Yeah. So David Byrne and Lucinda Williams did that show with me. And we did, I think we did a couple songs from both Interiors and from The Wheel. That was I actually, to tell you the truth, I didn't listen to it before they put it on. I didn't want to. I just said to my manager, "Does it sound good?" He goes, "Yeah, it sounds great." I go, "Okay, let's do it."
The thing I heard, also being a David Byrne fan, and you might not remember this, obviously, if you haven't heard it, but I'd love to see it because what I hear from him, it doesn't sound bad, but he sounds so unsure.
Yeah. Now, okay. So I did hear somebody played that live the other day, and I heard part of it, and I went, wow, he sounds unsure. Exactly that. But he probably was.
Well, yeah, I don't know if you guys rehearsed or what happened, how that works, but.
Well, if we rehearsed, it was very minimal, and I'm not sure he was used to singing harmony to, but whatever. It is what it is. It's a
It's so
moment
fun to
in
hear,
time.
right?
Yeah.
And so you take this back, the Reinventing the Wheel tour. That's what's coming up, right? Is this an opportunity to reimagine the songs or just to celebrate them?
No, I think some of them are reimagined, I would say. So back up a bit. I was supposed to do all of these dates in November and December, but I had knee replacement surgery in September, and it's taken longer to recover. And I really could not stand for a 2 hours show, and I didn't want to do a BB King and sit through the whole show. So we moved these dates to January and February. But yeah, some of the songs are reimagined, and the wheel is reimagined a bit because only three people in the world I have found who could play Stuart Smith's guitar part. One is Stuart Smith, one is Larry Campbell, and one is a stage tech in Sydney, Australia. And John freely admits he cannot play that part. So we're reimagining that guitar part for sure.
What is it about that guitar part that's
Oh my God, Kyle, it's how do you explain it? It's circular. It never stops. It's just a relentlessly fast moving circular guitar part that Stuart invented, and it's almost impossible to play. There's nothing enhanced about it on the record. It's his actual fingers.
That's it. Well, when you get something like that, well, that's fun. So, so
Well,
what
you
do
got to get the stage tech in Sydney to come up.
can't wait to hear what this all sounds like at the end of this. Further on, I guess more of the present. Since you mentioned Rumblestrip, did I see like John is releasing his debut album, right?
He is during the pandemic. We have a recording studio in our home. During the pandemic, he's been wanting to do this for a long time, and he was kind of faced with it. Like, I have this time, I have this music I've composed, I'm going to do it. So he recorded his debut album, and it's going to be released January 26th. That's going to be the second Rumblestrip release. And it's so beautiful. It's so complex and just deep. I think people will really be surprised.
And there's some nice poetry that it's happening with the anniversary of this and that, and
Yeah.
your the both of your story. I don't
Yeah,
know if you
totally.
can plan that stuff, but the stars aligned quite nicely for you all on that one. I also want to point out we've been playing the national song Crumble quite a lot right now.
Love it.
How did you end up on that one?
So during the pandemic, Matt Berninger, who's the lead singer in the National, as you know, he just kind of contacted me out of the blue and said, "Do you want to write a song together?" So we wrote a couple of things together, but not together. Together by phone, by email, by sending files back and forth. And then the time went by, and they were making this latest album, and they asked if John and I would be on it. So John's playing guitar on that track, and I'm doing the vocals with Matt. I just adore Matt's voice. He's just got one of the sexiest voices on the radio today. And it was a thrill. I loved singing with him. And I'm going to ask him to sing with me when I record this song that he and I wrote together that's quite beautiful as well.
And if that wasn't enough, because I was just going down the list here, a Broadway musical, Norma Rae.
Yeah, John and I have been working on this musical for 6 years now. So hopefully we're going to get it staged in 24. We'll see.
That's a lot going on. That's
That's a lot going on. Oh, another thing you'll enjoy too is that we just did a thing for the Lou Reed tribute record. And I think that will be out next year as well.
Wow. Are you able to say what you did?
Yeah. I mean, they gave me a choice and I chose the song Magician from Magic and Loss. Magic and Loss was my favorite record of his. And that song Magician is so dark and so eerie.
I was just listening to You Know You Were Loved. I don't know if that's the title of it. That's the hook of the song Yesterday. It's kind of one of those little, I think it might have been 90s Lou Reed, but a little forgotten, little toss off, you know, speaking of soundtracks. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's cool. I can't wait to hear the Magician and everything. But here we are once again celebrating 30 years of The Wheel. A absolutely fantastic piece of art that you all made in that time with your back against the wall.
It's a good album title itself.
No, seriously, congratulations on this record. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Kyle. I really, really enjoy speaking with you.
And my thanks to Roseanne Cash. The 30th anniversary edition of The Wheel is out now. Thanks, of course, to you for checking out the episode. Please, again, do hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that we put out every single week, new and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 3 a week, to keep you up to date on your favorite artists and discover those new ones. Grab us at Spotify, Apple Podcast, at NPR, WFPK.org. Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, anywhere you get your podcasts from, subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Of course, don't forget that if you do it over at Apple Podcast, leave a review, take a screenshot of that review, and then hit the link in this episode. You can drop all that information into it and could win some cool prizes from Consequence. That's at Apple Podcast. After all that, join me over at WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's 4 hours of favorites from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Lots of 90s. You also get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. That's a Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also catch me on the social media sites. The address is always the same, at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith, and I'll see you next time.
Big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality, pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling essential prenatal multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a 3-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It was really interesting talking to you. You've got a great trajectory in your questions.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.